Today is Thursday, July 11th, 2019. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Shir and Parshas Chukas.
Thank you very much for coming. In case you don't know, we're milking tonight. Thank you. Just in case you don't know, please take your cell phone and silence them. Please. There have been a few wonderful students here that were very generous, and they decided to bring some more goodies for us, plates and cups and some plasticware and napkins. It's really appreciated, and we want to thank you very much, all of us. We'd like to thank you for being so generous. I'd also like to thank Rabbi Berger and Young Israel of Northbrook for their generosity, for allowing us to have this wonderful, beautiful class all these years. Those people who set up the tables, get the chairs ready, we really thank you so much, whoever you may be. And I'd also like to thank those that come early and help me set up and schlep the food out of the car and help me get everything together. And it really is wonderful when we all work together for the great greater purpose, you know, here in Northbrook. And that's to hear Reb Soloveitchik speaking here every Thursday. Can we thank you too, Reb Moshe? And thank your wife for allowing us to have
her. She's not here right now. Oh, there she is. There she is. Okay.
Deborah, thank you. Thanks for sharing your husband with us, the rabbi. We are going to have class next week.
Yeah, believe that.
And we'll be Fleishik next week. And I want to thank everybody for showing up.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoy the class.
Okay, if I could add a dedication of the shir, to tonight is my anniversary, the wedding with Deborah.
How many years, Rav Moshe?
We don't count yet. It's always the first year. Okay.
It's like the first year, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Did you say you didn't want to?
Okay. The Parshas Chukas starts off, and I've spoken many, many times about the law of Parah Aduma. And I'm going to go over some of the ideas that I've used in the past, but I'm going to associate it with some new points. The Parshas Chukas is the ultimate chok. Chok is a mitzvah that's identified as a mitzvah whose reason we do not understand. And the way many mefarshim explain it, zos chukas haTorah, this is the chok of the Torah. The idea is that this is the foundation of all the mitzvos of the Torah. In other words, there are mitzvos that we recognize, well, we think we understand. And there are mitzvahs that we don't understand. But Parah Aduma comes and tells us the attitude that we have to all the mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is an act of submission to God. And if somebody does a mitzvah for whatever reason, he likes Lulav and Esrog, but he doesn't do it because it's a mitzvah, he is not acting in the proper manner. And that's because, in a sense, all the mitzvahs of the Torah have to be seen as a submission to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, matter of fact, my great grandfather Reb Chaim, we say in the Haggadah, Matzuzu Shanu Ochlim Al Shema. Why do we eat this matzah? So the Rambam says, no, Al Shema. What does this matzah remind us? Not why do we eat the matzah. We eat the matzah because the Torah commands us to eat the matzah. That's why we eat the matzah. The rabbi could give whatever drasha he wants. But the reason we eat the matzah is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to eat the matzah. When it comes to the mitzvos of the Torah, it's an act of submission. Reb Chaim, one of his students was Reb Shimon Shkup, who later became one of the greatest Rosh Yeshivas in Europe. So once Reb Shimon Shkup said, and this was very typical of Reb Shimon Shkup's derech, what's the reason for this halacha? Reb Chaim said, there is no reason for the halacha. The halacha is because the Torah said it. You can explain, how does it work, this type of thing, okay. But the reason, it's an act of submission to God. A matter of fact, toward the end of his life, stories brought down that a couple of yeshiva fellows came into the house and they were talking with the Brisker Rav, and who was Reb Chaim's son. And they were talking Torah, Chidushei Torah. So one of them said, so what is the reason for this? So Reb Chaim threw them out of the house. He says, when it comes to Torah, and then he said to the Brisker Rav that they should hear it, I don't want you associating with these people. But the next time they came, he treated them very nicely. But he wanted to teach them, halacha is halacha, because halacha is halacha. That's the reason, yeah?
And the Rambam, for example, with the Amen Mishmos.
So the Rambam, Reb Chaim said that, this was Reb Chaim's attitude in general, but Reb Chaim said that, let's say, the Rambam says that the laws of Kashrus, this would, I'm sure some of the doctors here will have trouble with this, but we're not too many today. That's true, okay. So the laws of kashrus are reflective of what's healthy and what's not healthy. So Reb Chaim said, the Rambam doesn't mean that God commanded the laws of kashrus the way they are because he wanted to promote good health. But it's because he wanted these laws that he created the world in such a way that it should be healthy. So that was Reb Chaim's attitude was that it is because it is, and that's the way it is. That's all. A matter of fact, the truth is that what Reb Chaim said, not that there aren't some questions that could be raised against it in the Rambam. The Rambam really says in the Mor Nevuchim, because the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says that what was the sin of the Eitz Hadas? What was the sin of the Eitz Hadas? So the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says that he said there was a certain philosopher that he asked him a question. He says, it seems very strange that it seems that Adam HaRishon was rewarded for his sin because afterwards he became Yodeya Tovara. After that, he became knowledgeable in good and bad. He sins. He became knowledgeable in good and bad. So the Rambam says, before he sinned, he was Yodeya Emes V'Sheker. He knew true and false. But later on, he knew good and bad. So everybody asks a very strange question. He says, emes, good and bad, that's morality. Emes for sheker, that's science. So the Rambam couldn't possibly be suggesting that not having a scientific approach, knowing science, is on a higher level than knowing morality. How is it possible? So the answer I heard from my father, and I also saw that written in my uncle's shiurim, that it's before man sinned. Now there's a difference between good and bad, and emes v'sheker, true and false. There's a gravity. If you throw a rock from from your window, it'll fall down because of the law of gravity. Is that good or is it bad? It depends if someone's standing underneath. If somebody's standing underneath the window, it'll be bad. It has no application. It has no application to scientific things, to mathematical things. Triangle has 180 degrees. That's good. That's bad. If you write it on a test, it might be good. I mean, but it itself, it's a question of true and false. Gravity, the laws of gravity. Those were the examples my father gave. The laws of gravity. That's true and false. But good and bad is that's in morality. You say this is good and this is bad. So before man sinned, there was no separation between good and bad and true and false. In other words, it was all viewed from the perspective of true and false. I shouldn't kill because I shouldn't kill. Not because it's bad for society. Because if we view killing because it's bad for society, I'm sure everybody has their own list of people that they might think it would be good to kill. Because when it comes to true and false, it is or it isn't. It comes to good and bad. A person can already make up all kinds of justifications for something. Rationalization for it. So this is the halacha. It's an act of submission. So this is the idea of zos chukas haTorah. Zos chukas haTorah. So when it says they became yodeya tov v'ra, the good and bad, means that they separated. They separated good and bad. They separated morality from mathematics and science. So, in other words, originally everything was viewed from the same perspective. But once they had the sin of the Eitz Hadas, so then a separation took place. And that's how my father explained. I remember this was in June, the June of 64, at the Young Israel Convention in the Catskills. So my father explained, this is the idea of Parah Aduma. The idea of Parah Aduma is it's an act recognizing the Torah as an act of submission to God. Not viewing it from the perspective of good and bad, but from the perspective of the emes v'sheker. Now, there is a question that is raised, and my uncle raises that question because the Medrash emphasizes over and over and over that it's a chok. Shlomo HaMelech said, "I can't understand the reason of Parah Aduma." Shlomo HaMelech, the Chacham Mikol Adam, the wisest of all men, he said that he couldn't understand. He said he could understand reasons for every mitzvah in the Torah. But Paraduma, he couldn't. And he deduced from that that even the reasons that he understood were not the real reasons for the other mitzvahs, according to the way Mepharshim explained the Medrash. So the question is, and my uncle raised the question, we find Rashi mentions that Rav Moshe Hadarshan gave reasons for Parah Aduma. Really, the truth is, I don't know why he quotes in the name of Moshe Darshan. The Medrash, it's mentioned explicitly in the Medrash, the reason of Moshe Darshan. I don't know why Rashi quotes it in his name. Maybe in Rashi's text of the Medrash, they didn't have it. He says that the Egel, that is the child, a child cow, that's it, a calf. And the parav, of course, is a mother cow. So the mother cow has to clean up the mess that the child cow made. So the question is, where does Rav Moshe Darshan come to give reasons? Where does the Medrash come to give reasons? It's a chok. So my uncle said there are three types of reasons. There is a reason of why, there is a reason of how, and there is a reason of what. Why there is a din of paraduma? Why paraduma? We can't explain. How paraduma is metaher? We can't explain. What's the what? The what is that any time you look at any mitzvah in the Torah, a person can derive a moral lesson from the mitzvahs. And to different individuals, you can have different moral lessons. There is a message. There is a message of the Torah, different moral lesson. And different time periods sometimes gives us insights that perhaps other generations, even previous generations, did not see. So he says, when it comes to the what, then we could give time, then we could give reasons. Now, but the question is, what does it mean that the Parah Aduma is mechaper, gives atonement for the golden calf, the red cow. Now, what was the red cow? They took a red cow. If somebody came in contact with the dead, or he was in a tent or a building with the dead, or even if he leaned over the dead, so he became tamei mes. And matter of fact, that's the big problem today from a religious perspective, let me add it, of going up to the Har HaBayis, to going up to the Temple Mount, because everybody today is tamei mes. And there are certain areas in the Beis HaMikdash Mount that you're not allowed to go if you came in contact with people who are dead, and consequently in order that a person's in a sense, I don't want to use the word, but the person becomes, as a result of his contact with the dead, he becomes contaminated. And as a result of this, the way to get rid of the contamination is he counts 7 days, he takes, on the third and the seventh day, they took the ashes of the Parah Aduma. How many paradumas there were? Some say there were six, and when Mashiach comes, there'll be seven. Some say there were nine, and when Mashiach comes, there'll be ten. But they burnt the paraduma. There was a whole ceremony that took place, and they would take a little of some of the ashes with mayim, which is living waters, waters that move, not still water. And they would sprinkle it. They would sprinkle it a touch on the person who came in contact with the dead on the third day and on the seventh day. And of course, he would have to go to the mikveh also. And he would be then come purified. And then he could first enter the temple. Now, the question is, there's a number of questions, but one question is, why coming in contact with the dead? Why coming in contact with the dead is, in a sense, limits a person from coming in, going to the temple. I think there is a certain tendency. Two things. There is a certain tendency, and if I say, sometimes we see things in later generations that they might not have seen in earlier generations. I think that's true in this generation. Sometimes rabbis tend to become funeral parlor directors. It's not, the Judaism was not to be a religion of the dead. Of course, death is part of life. But the main focus of the religion is to live in accordance with Torah. It's not just a question that the burial be in accordance with Torah. It's not just a question, but it's a question of the person's whole life should be in accordance with Torah. And in a sense, the Beis HaMikdash represents the closeness to God. And there's this unfortunate perception that when does one have to come close to God? When do you see people beginning in contemporary times having religious fervor at funerals and
weddings?
I don't see religious fervor at weddings.
Why? But they want to have the weddings on the right way.
Okay, that's about it. So,
a treif meal.
By the way, and a treif meal afterwards. Yeah. In contemporary times, religious fervor is associated most. You know, it's a time. Religion was practiced in the house. People with Shabbos would have Shabbos meals. People would daven. People, the whole life centered around God. Today, some people go to Shul Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, only to say Yizkor, Yom Kippur. And even that's becoming less and less increasingly. Funerals. That has become the religious experiences. The religious experiences have become associated with that, and there is such a tendency. That's where religion seems to play a bigger role in that aspect of life than anywhere else, and that's not what the Torah meant. My father mentioned the Rambam, when he discusses the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctifying the name of God. The Rambam says, what is the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? This is how he starts off. It's Parakei of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. How does he start? He starts off. What is the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? If somebody comes and tells you, violate one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, or I will kill you. So you violate the mitzvahs of the Torah. Then he says, when is this true? This is true with all the prohibitions of the Torah. But there are three exceptions. Avodah Zarah, Gil Arayis, and Shfichas Damim. Adultery, Shfichas Damim, murder, and idolatry. So the Rambam's very interesting in discussing the mitzvah of sanctifying the name of God. First, he mentions the exceptions. And then he says, when do you have to give your life over in the name of God? Should be the reverse. They should say, if a person comes and says, worship idols, something like that, you give over your life. And then he says, when is this true? This is true only by three sins. But the other mitzvahs, there it doesn't apply. After all, he's talking about sanctifying the name of God. So the answer is, the main mitzvah of sanctifying the name of God is in living in sanctification of the name of God, rather than in dying in sanctification of the name of God. The purpose of how does the Torah tell us that you don't sacrifice your life for the other mitzvahs of the Torah? V'chai b'hem, and you shall live in them. And you live by them. They have to be your source of life. V'chai b'hem. That's the mitzvah of living in sanctification of the name of God. So because of that, the Torah tells us, the Torah says, somebody who became identified with death, associated with death, he has to go through a purification process. But I think it's more than just that. And I've mentioned it here before. There is a psychological phenomenon involved. Now, the Torah tells us, by Yichi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shvas Reishana, Yaakov lived in Egypt 17 years. Now the word Yichi, by Yichi, in English we say, I live at such and such an address. In Hebrew there is a distinct word, it's Vayeshev. The more appropriate word, and this is the Bala Turim points it out, the more appropriate word would have been Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shvayesh Reishana. Yaakov resided in Egypt 17 years. Why Vayechi? Why Vayechi? So the Medrash says, so the answer is, the Baal Turim says, and I think the Chizkuni might also say it, he says, because Yaakov, when he heard that his son Yosef died, and his children got up to be Menachem him, so he said, Vayimayim, he refused. He said, Anochi Ered Livni Sha'ola. Yosef died, I'm going to go to the grave to him. Huh? In other words, what is the idea? As I've mentioned many times, there are two approaches to life. You could see life as a process of living, and you could see life as a process of dying. Every day is an additional day of life, but every day is a day closer to death. And the person very often. So Yaakov, and this is only one of the reactions, when he encountered death, or he thought he encountered death, when he saw the blood-stained clothes of his son, so he said, his vayimayim. And how did he do it? It was withdrawal from life. But when he heard, "Oh, Joseph, chai," so then, "Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihem," his spirit became alive. Yaakov was able to reverse the process, which is not easy, was able to reverse the process of seeing life as a process, from seeing life as a process of death, into seeing life as a process of living. And so that's Vayechi Yaakov. The Torah wants to point out those last 17 years. And it's very interesting that the Baal HaTorim points out the 17 years that Yosef supported Yaakov. The 17 years that Yaakov supported Yosef corresponds with the 17 years that Yosef supported Yaakov. What's the idea? The idea is, and this, I think, is a big lesson in how we have to deal with senior citizens. Unfortunately, I think people do not understand it. The first 17 years of somebody's life are the most progressive years of a person's life, even though in those 17 years he's supported by his parents. He's not independent. But those are the most progressive years of his life. Yosef, but we usually see the last years of somebody's life as years of falling apart. Years of just the reverse. It becomes years of seeing life as a process of dying rather than as a process of living. Remember, you always take a look. Very often you find hospitals, nursing homes, and cemeteries near each other. So it's a process. You should. Life has to become. But the proper attitude is the last 17 years could be as progressive as the first 17 years. The last 17 years could be as progressive as the last. That's what it says. By Yechi Yaakov Eretz Yisrael, even though he was supported by Yosef, but those were progressive years. He accomplished a lot in those 17 years. It's very interesting. I saw, I think the Meshech Chachma says, "V'yichi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim." What do you mean? He lived in the land of Egypt. He lived in Goshen, but his impact was felt everywhere. He lived in all of Egypt. His impact was felt everywhere in those last 17 years. So this is why? Because Yaakov was able to reverse the process from seeing life as a process of dying and seeing life as a process of living. But Yaakov seeing life as a process of dying manifests itself in withdrawal, of not being involved, of not having an impact or an influence. But then we see an opposite approach. Esav, when he sold the Bechorah, when he sold the birthright for a pot of lentil soup. Now don't fool yourself. Esav was not stupid. But how does the Torah explain it? He said it's worthless, the Bechorah. But why? Anochi holech lamus, I'm going to die. For lamali Bechorah. What was the Bechorah? The Bechorah was spirituality. Esav said, I'm going to die. Spirituality is worthless. Life is a process. For Esav had the Epicurean approach. What is the Epicurean approach? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we're going to die. Confrontation with death motivated him to indulgence. Now, interesting thing by the golden calf. What does the Torah tell us by the golden calf? The Torah tells us by the golden calf that the Torah tells us by the golden calf that what motivated, according to the Medrash, what motivated the building of the golden calf? Moshe didn't come down at the time they thought he was supposed to come down. Moshe ha'ish lo yadanu mehayalo. Moshe, that mortal man, we don't know what happened to him. And the Medrash says that Satan, made it appear to them as if Moshe was dead. Now I should point out also, I've neglected to mention, when Esav sold the Bechorah, that was the day Avram died. It was a day he confronted death. And the Medrash says, he said, in Mesos Zokain, if that elderly person died, les din les dayin. The world's spirituality is irrelevant. So because of that, it was indulgence. And because of that, the pot of lentil soup was worth more than the Bechorah, than the spiritual birthright. But at the time of Egel Hazav, so it appeared to them, whether they saw, as the Medrash seems to say, or they felt that Moshe was dead, they confronted death of their liberator, or the agent of God who liberated them. So they wanted to make an Egel Hazav. And what did they do when they had the Egel Hazav, the golden calf? What did they do? What they did was they gave olos, zvachim, they gave sacrifices, korbanos. And then what did they do? Vayochlu, they ate. Vayishtu, they drank. Vayakumu letzachek, they got up to be merry. Epicurean must have read that portion of the Torah. They got up to eat, drink, and be merry. What's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is that the whole purpose, their goal in confronting death was indulgence. In a sense, they were overcome. On one hand, it was a form of depression. It was a form of depression. People become depressed. And the reaction was indulgence. Eat, drink, and merry. But they wanted to give it spiritual fervor. And how did they give it spiritual fervor? They gave it spiritual fervor by making a golden calf. And that was the spiritual fervor and justification. They made a golden calf, and they gave sacrifices to the golden calf. So it was not just justification, but it was spiritual fervor. By the way, just as a side note, I'm not trying to reintroduce prohibition, but I think that from time to time, people identify drinking with spirituality. And I don't think this real spirituality is the one that the Torah talks about. So, I think we more and more are confronting this problem today. People use religion as an excuse for drinking. And
isn't that why they call it spirits?
And that's what I said. That's, yeah. You know, there was a, I'm not going to say who, there was a certain rabbi. He actually had Hasidic background. And anyway, and he was sort of like the assistant chief rabbi of the hippies during the 60s. Okay, so he said that he only takes He only takes LSD twice a year. Once, Erev Pesach, the night, day before Pesach, because Pesach at night he wants to see the Exodus from Egypt. And the second time is the day before Yom Kippur, because on Yom Kippur he wants to see himself standing before the throne of glory and giving an evaluation of his deeds. And if he takes enough of it, he probably did. Anyway, so, huh?
Acidic.
Probably.
Yeah, they got cleverness.
Yeah, cleverness. Okay, so, anyway, we're now entering, by the way, I'm not trying to take away from the spirituality. It's a new phenomenon. It really hasn't hit Chicago as much as it's hit New York, and certainly California is much worse. But I just want to say, spirituality does draw people closer to religion, but it also sometimes, if it's misused, draws people the opposite way, but they do it in a spiritual manner. They do it in a spiritual manner. And that's the same thing. That was the same thing that was happening at the time of the Egel Hazav. All right. So in other words, so the idea. Now, what's the idea? What's the idea of the of Paraduma? Paraduma is they took a red cow and they burnt it into ashes. And the Kohen who took the ashes with living waters, which is the symbol of life, and he sprinkled it on the third day and on the seventh day of the seven-day period. Now, ashes represents complete destruction, and living waters represents life out of destruction. So, this is, in a sense, historically, we have had periods like that. We saw destruction during World War II, during the Holocaust. And for many people, it was just destruction afterwards. But there were some that understood, that had special strength, that they had to rebuild. And somehow they were able to couple the ashes together with the Mayim Chayim, with the living waters, the establishment of the State of Israel, the building of houses of Torah, which took years. But out of the destruction can come life also. Destruction does not necessarily mean the end. Of course, we don't want destruction. And in a sense, one who comes in contact with the dead, life becomes a process of dying. But we want to reverse the process just like Yaakov did. And we couple, so together while we recognize, we don't deny the destruction that took place. But we have to add the Mayim Chayim, the living waters. That's the message of the Paraduma. That's why it's a kapara, it's an atonement for the Egel Hazav. Because the Egel Hazav, the sin of the Egel Hazav came about because the reaction to the perception of Moses' death, and that everything wasn't worth anything, so we just indulged. So the Paraduma is the kapara for that, because it's not all over. That's the idea of the Paraduma, of taking that and sprinkling it together, my friend. Now, it's very interesting. Now, my uncle has pointed out, now the mitzvah Paraduma was given to the Jewish people. According to one medrash, it was given in Mara. According to other medrashim, certainly was practiced at the time of the establishment of the Mishkan, whether it was whether it was on the eighth day, whatever it was, but it was early in the dedication or just post the dedication of the Mishkan, the mitzvah paradumu was done. So why is it placed here? Here we're talking about the Jews at the end of their 40 years sojourn in the Midbar. Why is it placed here? But the answer is very simple. In the 38 years, what happened to the Jews in the Midbar? In the 38 years, every Tisha B'Av, every Jew, dug his own grave. And he went to sleep Tisha B'Av night in his grave. During those 38 years, to a large degree, the Jewish people, the sojourn in the Midbar was a process of dying. And more than that, there's nothing told in the Torah about contact between the Jewish people and God. It's true, they had the Mishkan. But you don't find real communication. Listen, Moshe Rabbeinu always had Ruach HaKodesh. But real communication during those 38 years. So the Torah puts Paraduma here. But what does Paraduma tell us? In other words, you don't lose hope. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the Jew to return. And Paraduma is that the Jew has to learn that he can return, but he has to return. So right here, after Korach and after Meraglim, more or less 38 years have passed by for the most part. And here, the Jewish people, to a certain degree, not that there weren't crises, there certainly were crises, but this represents a new turn in the trip to Eretz Yisrael. So Paraduma is mentioned here to say that even though that there was a process of dying, the process of dying could be changed into a process of living.
Oh, that was wonderful. Thank you. Thanks very much. I'd like to mention that we need everybody to clean off your tables. You need to throw away the plates and cups. Keep the tablecloths on the tables, and just please clean off the tables like they were when you came in. We will have class next week, and I want to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos. Thanks for coming.